Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. Health and nutrition, top of the list. And we're going to talk about how natural sounds improve mood and productivity. We're also going to examine natural plant chemicals in licorice root could help fight tooth decay. We're going to look at an animal's presence, having a cat or dog or a bird, can ease social anxiety in kids with autism. And also, scientists figure out how vitamin E keeps our muscles healthy. Yeah, the bodybuilders have had it right all along about vitamin E building strong muscles. They were correct. And also today we'll discuss stress levels are linked to liver disease and death. University of Edinburgh. All of our research comes from peer-reviewed journals and mainstream universities every single day. And then we're going to look at our environmental segment today. We're going to talk about bees and bee colony collapse and bee health. Yes, the committee that's overlooking it, the chairman of the committee, praises neonicotinoids, the very toxin that kills bees, denies any connection to bee deaths. Well, we're going to challenge that. I've invited Ross Conrad on. Ross is a highly respected beekeeper in Middlebury, Vermont. He uses organic methods of beekeeping, and he's an expert on the subject. So we're going to talk about bees and the USDA and the 40% colony collapse. That's a big deal when you consider that one-third of all of our fruits and vegetables were able to grow because of pollination from this. So when you get rid of these pollinators, you're talking about a gross reduction in the amount of food available to us. Also today from our environmental segment, the governments are giving fossil fuel companies $10 million a minute in subsidies worldwide. Also, how photographing pollution has now become illegal in the state of Wyoming. Then we're going to have a segment with Elizabeth Warren on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and then my comments upon what I see is an extraordinarily foolish notion. Now, I'm going to share something you did not know about the Trans-Pacific Partnership today. Also, we're going to look at how big business wins and democracy loses as both the Democrats and Republicans lie about, well, just about everything, but on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Then I'm also going to look at the issue Obamacare, death to physicians, suicide rates climb since Obamacare. Medical doctor Elizabeth Lee will be talking about that also. So we have a lot to share. Let's get started. First up, we should know that, unfortunately, stress is a major killer. Now, this is from the University of Edinburgh. Talking about suffering from anxiety or depression, quote, could carry an increased risk of death from liver disease. The study is the first to identify a possible link between high levels of psychological distress and deaths resulting from a variety of liver diseases. Reasons for this are unclear, but we've known for a long time that you're at greater risk of dying of a heart attack or a stroke, of developing cancer. You prematurely age yourself. You die sooner if you're under stress. So this is just one more of those bad things, and this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Gastroenterology. So remember, when you're stressed, you're actually killing yourself. Now, of course, we're all going to be stressed for different reasons, but it's how we cope with that stress, not personalizing it, being able to take a moment, go to a quiet place, preferably some place that we're happy with, a place like a park or some place around nature, sitting on a bench, and just exhaling, relaxing our breathing, just letting our body be at ease, and then realize that we're more important than anything that we are stressed about. Never make your problem more important than your life. Now, natural sounds, according to this study, improve mood and productivity. This is from the Rensselaer Polytech Institute. Quote, playing natural sounds such as flowing water in offices can boost workers' moods and improve cognitive abilities, in addition to providing speech privacy. That's according to the latest research. And this was at a meeting of the Acoustical Society of America. So what does this mean in just regular lay language? Do you remember it was back in the 1980s, there was a whole movement to have recordings of waterfalls, of thunderstorms, of ocean waves. In fact, I did one myself called Natural Sounds of Healing. And it took me about 3 weeks, but at nighttime I would go out and I would take my audio equipment and I would record at my ranch where I live. I would record crickets, and then I would record frogs, and in the daytime, a wide variety of birds, and especially songbirds. And then I edited that together, and I got flute music and played the flute with the music and with the water, and also I have some waterfalls, so I just put up the mic and just recorded for about a half hour of waterfall music, edited all together. It was a wonderful hour of relaxation. You couldn't help but just be at ease, no matter how tense or angry or anxious. You just listen to that and you just fell asleep. Well, that's what we need to be doing, and that's what this is showing, that if you put nice, pleasant sounds on in an environment, it relaxes you and increases cognition. You actually get rid of the clutter, the excess stimulation. You get rid of the peripheral distractions because your mind is focused upon the soft, pleasant, natural sounds. And I remember once I was up, and this is, goes back at the very beginning of my career, I had a farm upstate. Thousands and thousands of people visited it. In fact, I'd have as many as 500 to 600 people on a weekend come up, like on a Saturday or a Sunday, where I'd teach them how to do organic gardening and they could take home produce with them. I remember once I said, here's a big garbage bag, fill it up, you can take whatever you can carry, and I give it for free. And then I would also ask if people knew of churches or kitchens that fed the homeless, and I said, take all you want, because there was a plenty to take. In any case, it wasn't fancy. It was up in Stone Ridge, and I would go up every weekend of the summer. And the one weekend, there were 50 people there, and there would be wonderful workshops, yoga, meditation, nature workshops, gardening. Everyone wanted to know about how to make tofu and different herbs, and how you take an herb, first grow the herb, medicinal herb, and then how you can then take that herb and make it into an essential oil. And this whole process was done so they'd actually take home little bottles of essential oil, like lavender that you put on your pillow at night, like 3 drops of lavender on your pillow helps you sleep because you breathe it in. The pheromones from the lavender oil go into the brain, and it causes a calmative effect, and that's why lavender is considered a calmative. In fact, if you've ever walked into a field of lavender, like in France, wow, just miles of lavender. It's almost surrealistic because we have nothing in America to compare that to. And there they do. They make more lavender, grow more lavender than anywhere else in the world. And they have this experience of making these essential oils, but you smell it. In any case, you can't help but just lay down and just put your arms out, your legs out, close your eyes, and just just be relieved of all physical stress. And that's what these essential oils are supposed to do. But anyhow, it was warm. It was in June, and it was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm looking around for everyone, and I didn't see anyone. But there's 50 acres, so they could have been anywhere. And then when I went over by the barn, here everybody was just sitting over there. Why? Because it was a summer rain. It was warm. And I had added on a tin roof where the chickens were. Now, a lot of animals, when it rains like this, they like to go into the barn. And they just sit there and relax, sleep. Cows chew their cud. And I walked in the barn, and here were all the guests sitting there on bales of hay with all these animals. They were petting the animals. No one was saying a word, but you could hear the rain hitting the roof. And you could smell the clover and the chlorophyll in the air. It was special. So get yourself a tape. There are a gazillion of them now. And put it on at night if you're having a little trouble going to sleep. And just listen to a thunderstorm or rain hitting a roof or a waterfall. This study shows that'll make a big difference. Also, they have now found from the University of Edinburgh in their dentistry division, they found how there's natural chemicals that can stop bacteria harming teeth and can help prevent tooth decay. The plant's natural product acts against harmful mouth bacteria and can help also prevent plaque buildup. The compound is called trans, T-R-A-N-S, calcone, C-H-A-L-C-O-N-E. And it's related to chemicals found in licorice root. And it blocks a key enzyme that allows bacteria to thrive in oral cavities. Now, the bacteria, Streptococcus mutans, metabolize sugars from food and drink, which produces a mild acid and leads to the formation of plaque. So brushing is important, flossing is important, but also being able to make sure that you don't have those sugars in your mouth or highly acidic things, because that can be a problem. So now you can chew on a licorice root. Also, an animal's presence, and this was important, can ease social anxiety in kids with autism. This is the College of Veterinary Medicine at Purdue University. Quote, animals' presence may ease social anxiety in kids with autism. This is a National Institute of Health study. And when animals are present, children with autism spectrum disorder have lower readings that detect anxiety and other forms of social arousal. So they're calmer. So the takeaway message for all the kids in America and their parents, get your kid a pet, because they'll put that energy into the pet and it helps relieve the anxiety they feel. And finally, a lot of us who are athletes and work on our bodies, we know that there are certain nutrients that there's a big difference when we take certain nutrients. And one of the nutrients to take before you work out in the morning is vitamin E. Here is what I suggest for your pre-workout supplementation. Magnesium from citrate, 800 milligrams. That will help prevent a heart attack. Vitamin E, natural, about 800 units with tocotrienols, 200 units. Coenzyme Q10, anywhere from 1 to 300 milligrams. PPQ, 10 milligrams. Quercetin, the bioflavonoid, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams. Hawthorn, 200 milligrams. And a glass of juice to drink it down with. 8 ounces of beet juice, organic beet, B-E-E-T, and 8 ounces of raw coconut water for all of its electrolytes. Now, that is one of the best possible things you can do if you're going out for a power walk, biking, jogging, tennis, a swim. And it can help enhance your exercise, give you greater nitric oxide, thin your blood, prevent a stroke or heart attack, strengthen your heart, and according to Georgia Regents University, quote, bodybuilders have been doing it right using vitamin E. It does help build strong muscles. Vitamin E has long been known as a powerful antioxidant, and now scientists have shown that without it, the plasma membrane, which essentially keeps a cell from spilling its contents, by the way, and controls what moves in and out, cannot properly heal. So vitamin E, you can. And by the way, that's a big problem with many cells, such as muscle cells, which get membrane tears when you start exercising. Quote, this is from the Medical College at Georgia. Every cell in your body has a plasma membrane, and every membrane can be torn. And vitamin E helps prevent that. This was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Free Radical Biology and Medicine. And just one more mention, stress levels linked to risk of liver disease and death. This is from the University of Edinburgh. Quote, suffering from anxiety or depression could carry an increased risk of death from liver disease. The study is the first to identify a possible link between high levels of psychological stress and death resulting from a variety of liver diseases. So we knew that stress was bad, but this is really bad. By the way, one of the things, if you have a person with Alzheimer's you're working with, make sure that they're not eating any red meat, because red meat, you're getting a lot of iron. Not good. The more iron you have in your system above what your body requires, it can lead to a progression of Alzheimer's disease. This is in the University of Melbourne, which is in Australia. Quote, higher levels of ferritin, an iron storage protein, may be associated with a transition from mild cognitive impairment to Alzheimer's disease. And that was published in the Natural Communications Journal. And they studied people over a 7-year period to determine this. So with meat, you're getting an awful lot of that. Now, tomorrow I'm going to talk about old bones becoming young again. Yeah, some really good research out of Duke University School of Medicine that we didn't know about, so we can rejuvenate our old bones and make them young again. And also, tomorrow, organic produce is higher in cancer-fighting nutrients than conventional produce. So this is a good argument against the GMOs, and I'll tell you which specific are higher in antioxidants. And there's a good practice to help your gut bacteria so you stay healthy in your intestine. So I'll give you all that tomorrow. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Elizabeth Warren on something brand new on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which we all must raise our voices to our legislators and let them know. We don't want the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We don't want the president having fast-track power. We saw GATT. We saw NAFTA. We saw the World Trade Organization. We know how corrupt the whole process is. So, no. No to this. Okay? And I'm going to share a few things before we take our first break over to Elizabeth Warren. Now, this is important. This is about where the money goes. Quote from Nadia Prupas. The fossil fuel industry receives $5.3 trillion a year in government subsidies despite its disastrous toll on the environment, human health, and other global inequalities. That's a new report from the International Monetary Fund. That means that governments worldwide are spending $10 million every 60 seconds to fund energy companies, more than the estimated public health spending for the entire globe. And that's from the economists Benedict Clements and Victor Gaspar of the International Monetary Fund. Quote, this is from their blog. These estimates are shocking. The number for 2015 is more than double the U.S. $2 trillion we had previously estimated for 2011. Subsidies occur in two ways, and they go into this. When people and businesses pay less than it costs to supply the energy, and also what they get in everything they do, they get to deduct it, and they get all these tax credits. So anyhow, could you imagine if we took away the fossil fuel subsidies and put that into natural? What a difference it would make. And that's terrific. We've got to pay attention to this. Who knew? Who knew we're giving the fossil fuel industries $10 million every 60 seconds worldwide? Now, I had explained about, I guess it was 2 years ago, that there was a movement in many different farm states to put laws, state laws, in effect that you could not, if you worked on a farm or had any relationship with a ranch, you couldn't then turn around and share any information about what they were doing that was destructive to animals. In other words, you could not tell the truth. Well, in Wyoming, they've taken it to an altogether different level. This is from Claire Burnish, quote, "Taking scenic pictures anywhere outside city limits in the state of Wyoming could now get you thrown in jail. Signed into law in March, the Data Trespass Bill enhances laws against trespassing. But the intent of the bill seems to be clear, protecting polluters from prosecution by criminalizing the collecting of evidence against them." Wow. No, it's not exactly as simple as just snapping a photo. But if you want to collect resource data without express consent to do so, and you intend to pass it on to a government agency, the penalties are a year in prison and $5,000 fine. Under the law's sweeping language, to collect means, quote, take a sample of material, acquire, gather, photograph, or otherwise preserve information in any form from open land which is submitted or intended to be submitted to any agency of the state or federal government, end quote. So, with that sweeping definition, anyone taking a picture outside of city limits, if that was considered a threat by any farmer, rancher, or anyone else, you could get yourself into trouble. You could go to jail. So much for our Constitution and freedoms in Wyoming. Also, yesterday evening on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we had a long evening. For those of you who stayed up and listened, good for you, because now you're probably the best educated people in America on the safety, the science, and efficacy of vaccines. Now, for those who missed it, I have reposted this today, along with adding dozens of articles, all scientifically vetted with full academic references. That means that any of the articles I post, you could go into a state hearing and put them on the record, or you could have your lawyer use them as a basis of a lawsuit. You will hear today, or any time you choose to download from our archives, the following. The director of the new film Trace Amounts on vaccines, John Gilmore, Dr. Tony Bark, medical doctor, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, also Janine Roberts, one of the greatest investigative journalists in history, Anna Daschle, editor of The Age of Autism, Dr. Brian Hooker, Dr. Lawrence Pavetsky, Dr. Mark Flannery, he actually talked about how he reverses vaccine injuries, one of the more interesting discussions, Dr. Ken Stoller, board-certified pediatrician, one of the greatest minds in immunology from the University of British Columbia, graduate of both Harvard and Stanford, Dr. Lucia Tomjanovic, the great vaccine attorney, Robert Krakow, Robert Kennedy Jr., a talk by Elizabeth Warren that was embarrassing because of how she pandered to the inner questions to the one of the top officials at the CDC, who, by the way, is a rear admiral. Also, parents speaking out. I had a group of parents speaking out against California State Vaccine Bill SB 277. Dr. William Thompson, the CDC whistleblower, the epidemiologist, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Nancy Banks, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, and from MIT, probably the world's leading authority on vaccine autism connection, Dr. Stephanie Senefeff. So that, 6 hours. I just wanted to get it all on the record. The finest minds in medicine and science letting you know, if you want the truth about vaccine safety and efficacy, here are the people. So plus articles and 3 documentaries. So they're there, and you can go to progressiveradionetwork.com or prn.fm and download them at your convenience. Now, before we go here in a second, the Natural Living Running and Walking Club will be meeting this Sunday at 9 a.m. in Central Park to help get you into shape. Some of you will want to do the New York City Marathon. We'll get you into shape for that. Others will just want to lose some weight and get healthier. That's fine, too. No charge to public service. Come 9 o'clock, 90th Street and 5th Avenue. And also, good news, we now have, and boy, do we need this, because when I got back after 5 months of being on the road, I can't tell you how many people are wanting some help. And of course, if I have a choice of helping those who are terminally ill, which I'm doing, versus those who are not, I have to always choose those who are in worse shape. And by the way, I'll be having on the program for an update on her progress in the very near future, Utrice Lead. As many of you know, Utrice was diagnosed with terminal cancer, stage 4B lung cancer, and ovarian cancer, and metastasis throughout her body. And it happened real fast. And they opened her up, closed her up, and said there was nothing they could do, and she should seek quality of care. That means hospice care and take morphine to kill the pain till you pass. And that's when she reached out to me. I've got her on a holistic protocol to improve the quality of her life. So every day she's alive now is a day that she wouldn't have been, and she's grateful for. So she's sticking with the protocol. I spoke with her last evening, and she's 100% doing everything, even though she says, Gary, I don't know how in the world I'm supposed to, you know, juice a whole bucket of garlic and onion and get it down, but she says, I'm going to do it, and she's doing it. So let's all wish her well, and I'll have her on to give an update. Also, Dr. Nadia is back. She has just completed 2 years of getting all of her board certification hours done. Congratulations. And she is asked, did I need any help? And I said, you bet I need help. So right now, for people who do not have life-threatening conditions, but need help with health issues, diet, losing weight, stress, whatever it may be, you can call her. It's free. I'm paying her, so you don't have to. It's my gift to those who need some help. And here's her number. You can, and she got a phone number just to be able to help people. Write it down. 646-771-3081. 646-771-3081. So we're happy to see that she's going to help for at least for a period of time. And until she gets her board, is completed in her board certification. And but that means she can help a lot of people. And in the past, when she helped people, people really appreciated it because she is really smart. And she speaks many languages, including Arabic. So that's that. Now, let's listen to something from Elizabeth Warren on the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
I've joined with Senator Heitkamp, Senator Manchin, and a number of other senators to propose a simple change to the fast-track bill, a change that would prevent Congress from using this expedited process on any trade deal that includes so-called investor-state dispute settlement provisions. And I come to the floor today to urge my colleagues to support this amendment. ISDS is an obscure process that allows big companies to go to corporate-friendly arbitration panels that sit outside any court system in order to challenge laws they don't like. These panels can force taxpayers to write huge checks to those big corporations with no need to file a suit in court, no appeals, and no judicial review. Now, most Americans don't think that the minimum wage or anti-smoking regulations are trade barriers, but a foreign corporation used ISDS to sue Egypt after Egypt raised its minimum wage. Tobacco giant Philip Morris went after Australia and Uruguay to stop their rules to cut smoking rates. Under TPP, companies could use these corporate-friendly panels to challenge rules right here in America. It wasn't always this way. ISDS has been around for a while, and from 1959 to 2002, there were fewer than 100 claims in the whole world. But boy, has that changed. In 2012 alone, there were 58 cases. Corporate lawyers have started figuring out just how powerful a tool these panels can be for corporate clients. Huge financial penalties in these cases that these cases can impose on taxpayers have already caused New Zealand to give up on some tough anti-smoking rules. It's already caused Germany to pull back from clean water protections, and it's caused Canada to stand down on environmental protections. If that worries you, you're not alone. Experts from all over the political spectrum, conservatives and liberals, economists and legal scholars on the left and the right, opponents of trade deals and supporters of trade deals, have all argued that these corporate-friendly panels should be dropped from our future trade deals. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said that we should not give, quote, investors the power to sue foreign governments to weaken their environmental and public health rules, close quote. Nobel Prize-winning economist Joe Stiglitz and Harvard Law professor Lawrence Tribe and other top American legal experts noted that, quote, the threat and expense of ISDS proceedings have forced nations to abandon important public policies, and that laws and regulations enacted by democratically elected officials are put at risk in a process insulated from democratic input. The head of the trade policy program at the conservative Cato Institute has said that ISDS, quote, raises serious questions about democratic accountability, sovereignty, checks and balances, and the separation of power. Concerns that, quote, libertarians and other free market advocates should share. ISDS is a major part of the reason why, no matter what promises are made, huge trade deals often just tilt the playing field further in favor of big multinational corporations. If a country wants to adopt strong new protections for workers, like an increase in the minimum wage, a corporation can use these corporate-friendly panels to seek millions or billions in taxpayer compensation because the new rules might eat into the company's profits. But boy, it doesn't work in the other direction. If a country wants to undermine worker rights by allowing child labor or slave labor or paying workers pennies an hour, there's no special worker-friendly process for challenging that. Instead, advocates for workers are stuck begging their governments to enforce their actions and their rights. That process can take years if the government responds at all. In fact, just yesterday, my office released a 15-page report detailing how, for decades, both Republican and Democratic presidents made the same promises over and over and over again about how good these deals would be for workers, and both Republican and Democratic presidents failed to enforce the labor standard promises in those trade agreements. Giving corporations special rights to challenge our laws outside our legal system is a terrible idea. Experts from every place on the political spectrum have concluded that it's unfair, it undermines the rule of law, it threatens American sovereignty, and it creates an end run around the democratic process. I urge my colleagues to support this amendment so that we can keep these corporate-friendly panels out of future trade agreements. Thank you, Mr. President. I yield.
And that was Elizabeth Warren, and I would absolutely agree with her. Let me share some insights of my concerns about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and why we all should look at this a little differently. Up to this point, we think, okay, well, like NAFTA and some of the other trade agreements, we may have some American workers adversely affected, but that's just the collateral damage. But we're going to have a lot more people put to work, and we're going to increase our exports, and we are going to have a thriving economy. But it's not true. They lied to the auto workers when they exported jobs to China and other countries, Mexico. They lied to the textile workers. But the average American is not aware that between the year 2000 and 2012, over 58,000 factories closed. Now, most of those closed either because they had been purchased by equity partnerships or different private groups, and they could make that same product but keep the logo, because it was really the logo they were buying, and move it to an inexpensive labor country. And that's what they did. Other factories closed because they had been loaded up with debt and couldn't service the debt in times of crisis. So tens of millions of workers were adversely affected. Now, here's what's coming. This is what I believe is not being discussed by anyone. Almost all of the trade agreements that you have seen or heard about would impact average hourly workers, but not our high-end professionals. In the United States, it's always been the ideal that if you go to graduate school and get your MBA, or you go to a graduate school and get a PhD or an MD, or become a professional like engineer, architect, physician, a CPA, a chemist, that you will have a very safe place. After all, you invested your time, lots of money, and discipline. And now you can take your place, and over a period of time, generally in the first 10 years, you'll be able to pay back your debt and then have some quality of life. Well, with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, what you're going to see is you're going to see, I believe, the following. I believe that they're going to allow certifications in the country of origin. So, for example, I think South Korea and Japan and India that have millions of highly trained, very smart, very capable, very decent people. I do not in any way criticize or blame them for wanting to work in the United States. But they're now capable of being, or will be, I believe, by this treaty, be able to be certified as a medical doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, an architect, or an accountant in their country by having the test givers originate from the United States, so that we'll be administering a test so that no one can say, well, you know, they're a medical doctor from India. It's not the same as one from America. Yeah, it is. This whole arrogance, this conceit that we're the only place in the world that has quality education. Sorry, there's quality education far superior to ours all over the world. But now imagine this. Imagine that you've worked for a long period of time. You build up seniority. You may not have a graduate degree, but you have experience. You've worked for 20 years in a particular industry. And now you're making $100,000, $120,000, $150,000 a year, a living, not just a living wage, but a quality of life wage. You're able to pay your bills. And now you're told that on a special visa, there are people coming in that you have to train. And let's say this person coming in has a PhD in your specialization. You're making $130,000, not including your holidays and your health care and your bonuses. And this person, as you will find out, is going to work for $40,000 and no benefits whatsoever. And what about all the medical doctors I believe are going to be flooding into America and other professions? Because once you have a treaty like this, it's a corporate-friendly treaty. And the corporations, law firms that charge people thousands of dollars to get special visas to come in, and the fact that if you can get rid of the professional class in America, you've gotten rid of opinion leaders, the people that we look up to because we consider them wiser men and women. And now you're going to eviscerate them. Now, we have over 10 million highly skilled professionals, from almost 1 million medical doctors and scientists and PhDs. I believe that they're going to be decimated. And why? Because people around the world are going to start standardizing medical care, and so you can get medical treatment done a lot of other places a lot less expensively. For example, a hip replacement in a typical New York hospital is going to run you around $35,000. You can get the same identical hip replacement at the finest hospital with outpatient care afterwards in Barcelona for $2,900. In the United States, if you have hepatitis C, you take a drug called Sovaldi. It costs you $84,000 a treatment each time. In India, it's $1,000 for the same identical generic version. So imagine what happens to our professional class that's hard put now when we're going to be flooding America with people who are certified and capable. What's going to happen to all those people who had put in so much time and energy and effort and education and expense? They're going to be wiped out. So it's not just the factory and textile workers. It's all of our professional class, because once you get rid of a professional class, you've gotten rid of the only barrier standing between those who end up running for politics or who are respected by the public, and now they're going to be unemployed, or you're going to bring the wages down so low because you've got to say, well, hey, all over the world, they're charging this amount, and so we have to charge less too. So American workers are going to be paying a lot less. And finally, on this very topic, this is from Bill Curry from Salon.com. Quote, if you need further proof of our democracy's ill health, the Senate provided plenty of it this week as it began debating whether to fast-track President Obama's much-beloved Trans-Pacific Partnership. By passing the bill, Congress would divest itself of its constitutional right to amend the agreement, and the so-called world's greatest deliberative body signal it will do just that. So acceptance or rejection of the agreement will be the most important decision Congress has made since greenlining the Iraq War. Yet no member of the public has been allowed to read the document, neither has any member of Congress. A copy lies in a locked room in the Capitol basement. There, relieved by security guards of any cell phones, cameras, or recorders, members may read it, but not allowed to take any notes. And we gripe about legislators not reading bills, but doing so can be a colossal waste of time. Bills are often literally unreadable. To tell a member of Congress to sit under guard in an airless room pursuing an impenetrable text insults not just that member, but democracy itself. We shouldn't castigate those who decline the invitation, just those who had stopped others from making changes to a treaty they haven't read. Few in or out of politics grasp this epic scope. This is partly due to the secrecy in which it is shrouded, but also to how both sides have framed the debate. At stake are rules governing a quarter of all world trade, and these rules may well supplant those in other trade agreements and so affect nearly all global trade. But that's not all of it. The first thing you need to know about the trade agreement is that it's about much more than trade. Of the 30 or more chapters, only 7 or 8 pertain to what we think of as trade issues, tariffs, quotas, dumping, and the like. Other chapters lay down rules that affect all commerce, intellectual property law gets a lot of attention, being of special concern to businesses. So that's what is at stake. Our legislators can't possibly fathom this. They're not allowed to debate it. They're not allowed to share it with the American public. Why would any responsible person think we should pass piece of legislation that is done in total secrecy? It makes no sense at all. Now, let's go up to our guest who is in Middlebury, Vermont, and say hello to Ross Conrad. Hi, Ross. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary. It's a pleasure to speak to you again.
Ross, within the past week, the USDA released a finding that the honeybee population has collapsed an additional 40% during the past 12 months. And this is on top of large percentage decreases in past years. And studies repeatedly warn that this has been due to honeybees' weakened immune systems from pesticides, the neonicotinoids, and bee pests such as the varroa mite, and pollution, and global warming, and even more recently, genetically modified crops. And most of the press targets the class of pesticides known as the neonicotinoids as a major culprit for honeybee collapse. However, last year, a study in the Journal of Experimental Biology identified Monsanto's glyphosate, or Roundup, as another causal factor disturbing honeybee behavior and impairing colony performance. Now, the Obama EPA and USDA now have a pollinator health task force, but absent from their agenda is the reduction of pesticide use that has been scientifically shown over and over again to be toxic to honeybees. So, Ross, I'd like you to put this new report into a larger perspective with respect to the deep symbolic relationship that exists between honeybees and other pollinators and our food supply and food security.
Well, I think you've just hit it on the head. I mean, there's so many things that are impacting and stressing the immune systems of the honeybees that it's just overwhelming them. And what's really interesting is of all the different stressors, pesticides are the one that we can do the most about the quickest, and yet we're really doing the least about. Pests and pathogens we can only control so well. Nutrition is an issue, and we're making some progress on that with farmers starting to put aside areas of land for pollinators, but industrial agriculture makes it tough for the pollinators. But pesticides, you know, we produce those, we spread those around. We could change that, and we could reduce the stress that the pesticides are causing the pollinators. And it's not just the pollinators. I mean, everything in the natural world is stressed. And beekeepers are doing the best they can, although they're caught between a rock and a hard place, too. The industrial, large-scale, kind of, I call them feedlot beekeepers, they've got tens of thousands of hives, and they need to use the kind of the shortcuts, if you will, various drugs and pesticides to help keep their bees alive, but those things have sublethal impacts and add a level of stress to the bees, where it's the smaller scale, more natural organic beekeepers, backyard beekeepers, that seem to be, for the most part, having less problems, at least during the summertime, for sure. That new study that you mentioned, for the first time, really, or maybe the second time now, they've started keeping track, is showing that many of these beekeepers aren't losing the majority of their bees over winter, as traditionally has been the case, but are now losing a large number during the summer.
What are some of the foods we take for granted to be always available in our grocery stores but heavily depend upon bee pollination?
Oh, it's quite a variety. Everything from various nuts like almonds, which are totally dependent on honeybee pollination, to all the berries and apples and citrus, various squashes, a lot of vegetables, fruits, that type of thing.
Okay, now, since many of my listeners are in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania, what has been the major cause of the loss of honeybees in the Northeast region, And these are states that don't have a great deal of GMO crop cultivation, although Western New York has substantial GMO corn being grown.
Well, there's a growing consensus that it is a combination. It's not just one thing. It is, you know, pesticides like varroa mites, like you mentioned. It is pathogens, various diseases, even new diseases that have been discovered since the onset of colony collapse disorder. But on further investigation, we found they're not really new diseases at all. They just are diseases that were there all along, but we hadn't noticed, or because we weren't looking hard enough and really paying attention until the bee crisis hit. Poor nutrition is a big one. Also, there's, you know, honeybees are not native to the United States. These European honeybees that we have here, that we provide us with pollination and with honey, are all brought over, and so the genetic diversity of the bees here in the States is limited, and that plays a role in their overall health. And then, of course, pesticides are a big one. The neonicotinoid pesticides being the most commonly used and sold, I believe, in the United States today, systemic pesticides, which there's a lot of holes in the regulatory process, I'm sorry to say. From my perspective, there's no meaningful regulation of these pesticides. It's just we really don't understand the full nature of their impacts, unfortunately, until after we're seeing the results, which is what we're starting to see now, it appears.
Well, on that level, I'd like to share two comments. This is from Christina Sarich. She says, quote, want proof that our representatives are likely taking handouts from Syngenta, Bayer, and other big agri makers of bees and butterflies killing neonicotinoids? Elected Representative Rodney Davis of Illinois, who also happens to be the Bee Health Committee chairman appointed to study pesticide and herbicide connections to colony collapse disorder, is singing the praises of neonicotinoids. Davis claims that the bee-killing neonics have nothing to do with the recent findings of numerous other studies showing that the pesticide class is likely killing off pollinators. He says that it is the varroa mite which is the blame not Syngenta, Bayer, Dow, Monsanto, and other toxic chemical makers. So what do you think about the head of the committee that's supposed to study this for the American people is a pro-GMO, pro-Big Agra person, and it's not even looking at the number one culprit?
Yeah, this is a tactic that the pesticide industry is using right out of the handbook from Big Tobacco. They're basically buying influence. They're pointing fingers at everything but themselves because, yeah, there's a lot of things affecting the bees. They're buying misinformation and science to confuse the issue and create doubt and this appearance of debate. They're doing all the things that Big Tobacco did to put off any meaningful regulation and action on a dangerous product that's on the market for decades, and they seem to be successfully employing those same strategies.
And finally, a formal letter to the United States Department of Agriculture reports that scientists are being harassed and their research on bee-killing pesticides is being censored or suppressed by the Monsanto-infiltrated agency, the USDA. At least we are organizing formally against a scourge that has been painfully obvious for years. And it states, quote, the possibility that the USDA is prioritizing the interests of the chemical industry over those of the American public is unacceptable. So signatories include the American Bird Conservancy, AVES, the Center for Biological Diversity, the Center for Food Safety, the Farm Workers Association of Florida, Food and Water Watch, Friends of the Earth, Green America, Organic Consumer, and Sierra Club. So they're saying, you are harassing, you are suppressing information that shows the true nature of colony collapse, all to protect the special interest. So that's the problem we face today, and unfortunately, that's the politics of Washington. Ross, keep up the good work up there. Now, Ross has a book called Natural Beekeeping, Organic Approaches to Modern Apiculture, and his website is dancingbeegardens.com. All the best to you, Ross.
Thank you so much, Gary.
And we're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.
Backfield in motion.